This is the word of the Lord.
Many of you would know one of our church members, Frank Grouso, who's a renowned South Australian artist of a range of different styles, and he's been sort of pioneering his own style in recent years. You might see some of his artwork on our side on our fence, and up until the Christmas time we had a beautiful blue sort of a cross figure overlooking our sanctuary garden. We took it down because of the lights. After church last Sunday, I happened to mention over coffee with Frank, just saying, you know, Frank, you've got a whole range of bits and pieces, and I've been exploring different nativity scenes and the theme of journey, but I don't think you've done any nativity ones, have you? There's a sort of a need to do something a bit different. They're all very, very similar. By 3 p.m. that afternoon, Frank had sent me his latest nativity piece, and I just love it. It's in Frank's sort of very enigmatic style. It's one in which it draws you deeper into it. It's evocative. It doesn't try to say too much, but you can sit with it and just gradually see more and more. I'm sure we'll have this made up as one of our artworks on display as well. The Nativity. And that's sort of a bit of a metaphor for what I'd like us to do today on this Christmas Day, as we reflect on a narrative which I'm pretty sure is not unfamiliar to most of us. It's great when some of the younger ones get to hear the Christmas story and to see the significance of the various different items of what we call the Nativity. It's a bit of a time to reminisce, and as I was preparing for today and reflecting on the familiarity of the Christmas story and the Nativity story, my mind went back to Christmases past. I grew up in Auckland, I'm a Kiwi by birth, and our family and our uncles and aunties and all my cousins every year would gather at a little parkland called Dingle Dell. A few years back, I happened to have a few hours free in Auckland, and I decided to go and see if it was still there. It's probably been overbuilt with one of these great big playground thingies. But I went to visit Dingle Dell, and it is still there. And even more amazing, it is just as I remembered it. On that little grassy knoll, we would describe it as a slight rise to it. My grandfather would get his prized new camera out and the tripod, and his thing which he was so proud of was his light meter. He would do the light meter settings on the Christmas afternoon sun. It would take us 10 minutes, 20 minutes, sometimes even half an hour to get it all absolutely right. Now, if you know what it's like to keep your family still in one place for 5 minutes, it was an endurance, but it was fun. And we have some wonderful family photos still that we can go back to. So when I visited Dingle Dell in Auckland, this little park, and discovered it was still there, not only was the area where we would have our expanded treats, all the foods that would come from the uncles and aunties, usually the aunties, would put out all the spreads and all the fun that we would have eating those, and we had about 15, 20 cousins would come and pile in. Behind it, there were these wonderful paths where you could go and hide. It was great for games. So I went to see, I wonder if those paths are still there. And sure enough, the paths are exactly as I remember them. You know, sometimes our memories aren't. We go there and we think, ooh, that's quite different. I could have followed the path and know where I was going. It was so familiar with all the hiding places. And of course, being New Zealand, you could leap into the bush because there's no snakes or spiders or anything else of that nature. So you could hide yourselves under the bushes and all those types of things. In that moment, as I walked that pathway, the past and the present came together in my imagination. I relived the running, the shouts, the games that we would play. It was very real to me. And it's something of that bringing together the familiarity of the past and the present that I think speaks to us over the Christmas season. We have so many traditions, so many things that are familiar to us, but it's their very familiarity, the fact that these are things that we have been doing, that actually speaks to us if we stop and reflect on it. The Christmas story is like revisiting a familiar Christmas pathway. There's not a lot of surprises there. When we hear the Bible readings, there's not a lot that we hadn't known. Sometimes we see things that we had overlooked or forgotten, but generally speaking, we're pretty familiar with the Christmas story. In some ways, we're overly familiar with it because there's so much else that's been tossed into it and added to it that we've got to remind ourselves that there's a whole lot of things that we think are part of the Christmas story that actually aren't there in the Bible. I'm not going to go into it. It's another sermon that I had a few years back of discounting all the bits and pieces that we think are all part of a Christmas story and saying, no, that didn't happen, that didn't happen. You know, there were all those different types of things. Pretty sure there was still a kiwi somewhere in that Christmas scene, but apart from that, I think it's... So as we revisit that familiar Christmas pathway, let me ask a question. It's one that's been on my mind for the last few days. What would be different if the Christ child had never entered the world? What would be different if Jesus never came into the world? The Jesus who went on to be baptized, and his example, his teachings, the way in which he gathered people, where people were just drawn into his imagery of the kingdom, the invitation that the kingdom is now in their midst through the person of Jesus. When we ask that question, we realize that this time-honored story, so over 2,000 years old, continues to speak into our world today, because our world today has been shaped by the events of Jesus' birth, profoundly shaped by the events of Jesus' birth. And we continue to enjoy, to remind ourselves, to be enriched by all that is speaking to us. So I want to reflect on that. What does it mean to us today in 2024, almost 2025? Against that backdrop, I'm not sure how you feel. I'm sure there's a variety of different perceptions and thoughts. But I hear an awful lot of conversations these days, questions about meaning and hope in a world that is going in directions that we're never quite sure where it's going to go. What is developing? There's different movements. Things are no longer normal, and we're having to adjust to that, and they have no sign of going back to anything they used to be. And some would describe it, we're living in an age of anxiety, exasperation, even anguish. Now, I do know that, you know, amongst our leaders, our political leaders and others who have responsibility, there are people of goodwill. But there are times I do hear our leaders and announcements of policies and decisions that are made, and I think, what are you thinking? That is just not a good choice, that decision. It seems right across the spectrum at times. And I know I'm not alone. There's a frustration about our, what direction are we going? What are we prioritising? What are we saying is most important? So against that backdrop of an age of anxiety and exasperation, even anguish, there are deeper questions of faith. You know that census question, whether you identify as religious or not, and the figures come back that a significant portion of Australians that now say that they are of no religion. One of the big mistakes is that people have assumed that if people tick the box no religion, it means that they're atheist. And recent research has shown that is far from the case. Lots of people who tick that box say, I believe in a supreme being. I believe there's someone out there. I believe there is purpose. It's just religion I'm not so sure about. Churches can get in the way sometimes. Religious institutions, the track record of churches. And I sort of understand that. But some form of greater being, it's a rare person who says that there is no meaning in life. It just happens. There's no right or no wrong. There's no order behind it. Most of us instinctively know that is not the case. And another question that follows on from that if there is this God or some greater being out there, is this God distant and disengaged? Is God watching on what is happening in this world? What's happening to creation and the environment and all the things that people can be drawn into that are just not good? So the deeper questions can be what at first can sound like a very glib question. What on earth is God doing? Until we realize the whole Bible is answering that question. The whole Bible is telling us what on this earth God is about and what God is doing. And it's about creation, and it's about redemption, and it's about transformation and creativity and making culture, because that is what God is doing. And central to that mission of God, that work of God, is the answer to the question, does God care? I mean, that can be a big picture question as we look at injustice and things that happen and people who have so much power and wealth and seem to get away with anything, and others who are good people seem to suffer and have incredibly hard times. Does God care? Well, I'm not going to give the answer to all those questions, but I'm going to tell you where those answers are to be found. And primarily, the answers are found in two events. The profound answers are two events that are simply acts of love. The first event is Christmas. The second event is Easter. Both of them are profound acts of love. There's an interesting contrast I hadn't thought of that I heard this week, is that the second event, Easter, is a religious occasion. The time of the Passover, the pilgrims were drawing near for their religious observance in Jerusalem. The first great event, Christmas, wasn't a religious occasion. It was a political occasion. Caesar Augustus called a census. He wanted to know how many people were out there, how many men might be recruited for the army, who might be taxed. It was a political occasion that drew the first event. So let's unpack that a little bit further. Now, I'm not going to focus on the second reading that we had from Luke chapter 2, that long narrative where it starts off with Caesar Augustus calling the census and the journeys that followed and all the events. I'm going to assume are reasonably familiar to all of us. I want to just go back a step. In chapter 1, we've been looking at it in the last few weeks here at St. Matt's. In chapter 1, Luke, who's the great storyteller, takes a few bare facts and weaves into it a sense of meaning, of wonder, of awe as to what God is doing. First of all, we have the amazing pregnancy to Elizabeth and Zachariah, and Zachariah's disbelief left him speechless. And Elizabeth reflects on the birth with Mary. And Mary also has the astonishing news about her pregnancy, and all that gathers together follows on as a result of that. And she spends 3 months with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, whose pregnancy leads to the birth of John the Baptist. After the birth, Zachariah finds his voice again. In and through the narrative, Luke weaves some significant songs, some reflections, some prophecies that help us to understand what is God doing behind this miraculous pregnancy for Elizabeth. What is God doing behind this miraculous conception of Mary with the birth that yet is to come? And right at the end of Zechariah's prophecy are these two verses. And I heard them earlier in the week and it just really struck me. This is why Christmas continues to speak to us today. So I'm just going to go through these two verses. But let's just have a touch of why it is so significant. First of all, it's the word because. It's an innocent sort of word, because. You know, sometimes we ask, kids ask parents why you do things, and when we can't think of an answer, we just say, because. Yeah? Most of us resort to that answer from time to time. Because actually means there's a purpose. This actually is part of God's plan. Because God cares, because God sees what is going on in the world, because God has got a plan, a project, he sent his Son into the world. You know that profound, probably one of the most famous verses, if not the most famous verse in the Bible. For God so loved the world. He acted. He did something because of God's merciful compassion. Now again, we hear those words and we think, well, that's a given. That's a sign of any good and right person. Actually, that wasn't the case in Jesus' day. The qualities of mercy and compassion were regarded as signs of weakness in the Greek and Roman world. If you show too much mercy and compassion, people will take you for granted and start walking all over you. So they actually said, no, mercy and compassion are dangerous things you must resist. If a master shows mercy and compassion to his slaves, then other slave masters will have all the slaves saying, well, we want to be treated the same way. The language of mercy and compassion entered into our world through the Judeo-Christian traditions and messaging. The God of the Bible is remarkably known for his mercy and compassion. There were thousands of gods in the ancient world. They had all different types of attributes and qualities, and some were hunters and some were fighters and all sort of different types of gods. They had all different types of moods. Some were renowned for being grumpy in the morning, so just make sure you don't disturb this god in the morning. And other gods would actually have a fickle clash within the heavens and just and zap people for all sorts of reasons. You see it in all the different murals and things in the ancient world. It is only the God of the Bible who is described by the terms mercy and compassion. Now you'd think that's good, that's entered into our world, it's made us a better civilization, a better culture, because it's come through the Judeo-Christian tradition. You think, well, that's not speaking for today's world. Everyone recognises that mercy and compassion are good qualities, aren't they? There's an interesting piece by the journalist and historian Julia Baird, who often writes for the ABC or on The Conversation. And Julia Baird has had a recent book on the power of grace. It's a wonderful book, well worth, if you're looking for a super late Christmas present or whatever else, we can try and check it. The book by Julia Baird about grace is really significant. She writes it, she went over to the US. She had some times where she was in the US as a journalist and other things, and caught up with some friends as part of her promotional tour. And she was asked to speak at various public events in New York about this theme of grace. And she was surprised by the pushback she received. And she said, there's a change of culture happening where the language is now of retribution, of going after people who've dared to challenge us or have crossed us or not part of our agenda. And she was intrigued by the pushback afterwards to say, no, it's actually that energy that comes from going after people who oppose us, of proving ourselves that we are superior, we will win, we are the winners here, that's giving people focus and energy. And she said, but it's a poorer world if we fail to live by grace. But then she describes signs of grace that she saw in the world around us, in the supermarket, as people helped others, and signs of grace as friends caught up over the years who hadn't seen each other but just regained and resumed friendships and relationships. These qualities of mercy and compassion are distinctly Christian qualities, and Jesus exemplifies them more than anyone else. You see, this pathway that we are following in the Nativity is a pathway that leads us to an exceptional person, Jesus of Nazareth. Zechariah continues, because of God's merciful compassion, the dawn from on high will visit us. Now, I couldn't think of any other way to describe this, a little bit how this speaks into our world today. And I've probably been reading all the wrong pieces on the internet. But you know that saying was in the 2016 election, when they go low, we go higher? That was changed, wasn't it, for this most recent election? It was when they go low, we go tougher. We'll push back. There's some ways in which we think let's just give up on that hope of values and ideals and doing the right thing. And let's just do what works. But the dawn from on high, so the imagery for heaven, makes a difference. And actually it is at the heart of our gospel. It's why we pray in the Lord's Prayer, your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, as it is on high. To shine on those who live in darkness and the shadow of death. One of the realities is that every day isn't like Christmas Day. Some might say, thank God for that. Others would say, well, there's a whole mix that comes. But the reality is that our life does know darkness in different ways, a whole variety of ways, whether it's emotional and it's all part of our mental outlook, or whether it's the nature of the world around us and grim news that we have to process, and all those different types of things, and even the shadow of death. It's something that our household has been working through in the last 2 years, as our household has lost both of my parents, John's grandparents, and my brother. And it's still with us. It doesn't go away, that sense of grief. And I know from conversations around us that that shadow, that sense of grief, the realities of life that we have to, that life isn't just all roses, is part of the human experience. The ancient world explanation for that was it's because of the mood of the gods. The Christian explanation of it is that God says that is not the way it will be. It's not the way it was meant to be. The light that shines into the darkness, the light that we can hold firm to in the shadow of death. And as we navigate, sometimes it's prognoses and tests, sometimes it's just the realities of aging. Whatever that is in our own experience, there is a light in that darkness. Two to go. I was going to do it as one, but it was too rich to do it. To guide our feet. Now, you might have noticed there's a lot of opinion out there. If you thought there was a lot of opinion in the media, on the radio and TV and all the different directions, there's a lot of people wanting to give us advice. Yeah? And if you don't think there's enough advice there, just go on social media. There is so much advice that comes on social media. Things I never knew I needed to purchase until it just appeared in my feed for some reason. The alarming things, it's often right. It's usually tools. There's so much advice that comes at us in different directions. Who do we trust in this sea of opinions and people saying, come this way, go that way, make this choice, buy these clothes. This is the way to go. This is what it means to be cool, to be accepted, to be popular, to have a sense of getting ahead, of living well. All these different voices coming to us. Did you know the first name for the Christian movement? Anyone know what the first name for the Christian movement was? Not you, Roman. You were here last night. The Way. The Way. Why? Because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the one amongst all the other voices and opinions that we can trust to find that guidance that leads to good choices, to good pathways, into a life that we can look back on and reflect on as a life well lived because we followed the way. And finally, and I had to separate this off because it is so, so profound, into the way of peace. Now, notoriously, in beauty pageants in years gone by, when contestants were asked to talk about what their vision is for the world, their stock answer was world peace. I doubt there's few people today that actually would say, you know, I do really want world peace. There is so much that is not at peace, so much conflict, so much movements of armies and generals and leaders saying, I want that bit of land, or we want to have this for our security, or we want to control things so that we are the most powerful nation. or even in our own environments, even our own households, we know that is also true. In too many households, there's struggles for power, for control. We need the way of peace. It is no accident that one of the greatest titles given to Jesus, and it goes right back to that prophecy in Isaiah, the Prince of Peace. His way is another way. It is not the way of retribution. It's not the way of seeking to be most powerful or the wealthiest or the most well-respected or the most popular. The way of Jesus is a life-transforming way. If the pathway of Christmas takes you anywhere, I pray that it would take you back to discovering Jesus. This amazing child, the Son of God, taking human form, being absolutely exceptional in his teachings, in his way, in his personality, his seeing of people, of transforming lives, of bringing forgiveness, and the way of Jesus that leads to the cross and the resurrection and the hope that Jesus alone can bring. This is why we celebrate the Christ child. This is why Christmas is so special. So, my invitation to revisit those familiar pathways and discover, if we stop and listen, we will discover things that have been there in front of us all along. This past week, Fiona passed me on a blog from an English writer called Sarah Clarkson, which is a beautiful way of writing. And she had a long piece written about innocence and how we shouldn't be sold the lie that we can't seek innocence. But she has one paragraph that just jumped out at me. So this is the paragraph I want to finish on. Sarah Clarkson writes, "As we enter the Christmas season, as the journey of Advent closes and the horizons of celebration glimmer and burn, my wish for you, for myself, is the capacity to put aside the weary rush, the ragged sense of what needs to be done, the lie that joy is for children and that innocence can't be restored, and instead, stop. Stop. Turn. Find the light to which Advent has been leading us. Lift our faces, astonished, to the rising of love. Lose ourselves in its brightness and find whole worlds of hope blossoming up from the ground of our ordinary." Look deeper. Look again, affirm afresh just how wonderful the love of God reflected in his Son Jesus entering into this world, a journey that took him to the cross and beyond. And there we find a Christmas well worth celebrating. Amen.